This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to have you with us. And do I have a humdinger of a guest to start us off today? Stephanie Miller is kind enough to take some time to join us today to talk about, well, politics as always, but the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour coming to both Minneapolis, St. Paul, and to Chicago. Steph, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
Matt, I am doing the show, as you can see, from my bed.
Yes.
Because we're talking about sexy liberals, but also so you can see that's Clyde and that's Bonnie.
Hello. So
I'm in bed with my dogs, Matt.
Mama, you're a tease. I'm my usual wash and wear self. You look absolutely fantastic. And by the way, can I just tell you how happy I am you guys are coming back on Sexy Liberal. We're doing a full tour this time.
Yeah. Oh, my God, Matt. I don't know what I agreed to. Somebody must have pictures of me doing something because 15 cities, Live Nation is producing at this time, which is really a big deal for us. And I'm so excited we're kicking it off in Minneapolis because, as you know, we've just, you know, loved Minneapolis so much. And your station has been there from, you know, the get go and really gets it. Why we need progressive radio in this country. And so, oh my God, between all the jokes about the Harmar Mall and My Pillow Guy, you know, we just have a wealth of, and whoever thought that Katie Britt would be a crazier Republican woman than Michelle Bachmann? I mean, right?
Yes, you're right. She is. That is just
you guys never thought anyone would out crazy Michelle Bachmann, did you?
No, I love Salem's Lot. She's a hoot. I do want to make sure I mention Minneapolis, St. Paul. The kickoff show is at the Pantages Theater, April 13th in Minneapolis. And for our friends in Chicago, oh boy, is there a treat for you. For the DNC special, Saturday, August 17th at the Vic Theater in Chicago. You're going there for the DNC. That's going to be cool.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We're kicking off the DNC. So and as you know, Matt, there's always special guests at every show on panel. And we're working on that still, obviously, for Minneapolis and for Chicago. But we always have terrific celebrity guests, you know, from whatever city it is. We've had, you know, Jan Schakowsky and Jill Weinbanks in the past in Chicago. And yeah, well, let's just say we have a couple surprises in our pocket that we're working on for Minneapolis. So
I'll ask you off the air if it rhymes with Globishar. Just we don't want to say anything. Just that's going to be you and me privately.
You would make a terrible spy.
I would. I think that I'm horrible at poker, too. I really am. Okay, so you've done this enough. You got Fugelsang coming, John, who's my man crush, Hal Sparks, Frangela's coming. You've done this enough time with these people. Who is the best to travel with? Who's the worst to travel with?
Oh my God, they're all fantastic. And Hal Sparks, I always say this, Matt. I not to be a suck up. I just feel so honored to work with these people. In my opinion, they are the smartest, funniest comedians out there. And they just are, they are truly what a sexy liberal should embody. You know, we started that, it was a joke. Like, we didn't mean us, we meant you. You know, we meant it's sexy to be liberal. You know, it means you're open-hearted, you're open-minded. But, you know, they just, it's such a great comedy show, Matt. I mean, people bring their right-wing spouses or friends or whatever, and they end up having a great time because, you know, funny is funny, right?
Well, it is. And I was looking at your show list. You're going to Kansas City. You're going a lot of places. And it is kind of one of those things where I'm glad you are, because I think that there is this tendency now to kind of avoid some places. and going across the country and bringing it out there, I think it shows that, you know, once again, yeah, comedy is universal. This is not about, you know, left or right per se. We're going to have a good time. But at the same time, we also have a message here that if Trump gets in again, this is not going to go well. And I think sometimes delivering that medicine always goes down sweeter with a lot of laughs.
Oh, God, yeah. You got to laugh or you'll cry all day, as I always say, right? I mean, you know, and Senator Katie Britt, I just things like that, you're like, when she sent out the email, you know, the fundraiser going, they're not laughing at me, friend. They're laughing at you. It's like, no, we're all laughing at you.
Yeah, it's you, yeah.
oops. Uh-oh. Somebody else is calling me. Never mind.
Oh, okay. All right. No problem.
Okay. That must have been someone important from Minnesota. Hey, did you know you're on with Matt McNeil right now?
Am I?
Yeah.
Steph, when you talk about Katie Britt, we should mention today, just today, because we have breaking news for you, two of them for you. Marjorie Taylor Greene just and put out the order to try to get rid of Johnson.
Yes.
But it sounds like,
oh my God.
Yes, I don't quite, what are they trying to do? I mean, are they just pouring gasoline on the clown car at this point?
Oh my God, Matt, after clown car of an impeachment hearing again this week,
yes,
where the witnesses only implicate them in crimes, not Joe Biden. I mean, they end the week vacating the speaker, their own speaker again, right?
Yep.
And then, and the news that the RNC is going to pay this crook's legal bills.
Yeah.
They take all the money to pay for Donald Trump's, the crook that they have nominated to be their presidential candidate. I mean, you cannot write this, Matt.
Oh, it gets even better. How about they're losing another Republican?
Oh, God, like Gallagher.
Yeah, no, this is the guy from Wisconsin. Gallagher, the chair of the China Select Committee, he is going to read one-seat majority for the rest of the year.
I'm telling you, we could have a speaker.
One-seat majority for the rest of the year.
I'm telling you, we could have a speaker, Hakeem Jeffries, before the election.
Yes.
At this rate. I mean, it is just a word I can't say and show.
Yeah.
It is just a crap show over there. It's hilarious. And by the way, couldn't happen to a nicer party. They deserve this. You know, like they have protected this crook for how many years that they know is a complete lifelong criminal. It's like, well, you get what you reap what you sow. Like now, you know, you don't get any money for your down ticket candidates. It's all going to the crook you nominated.
Well,
good
luck.
And
you brought that point up, and that's something there that is not really being talked a lot about. Trump draining all the funds from the RNC. This is money that's supposed to go to Senate races, some of the more tougher toss-up governor and House races. They're not going to have anything. They're going to be on their own. And that does definitely help the Democrats down the line.
Yeah. And can I ask a question, Matt? Are these the dumbest people in the universe?
Yes.
Seriously? He puts his daughter-in-law in charge of the RNC and she goes, oh, absolutely. None of this money will be going to Trump's legal bills. Like 3 weeks ago on Fox, I'm like, you idiots. Have you not been paying attention to this lifelong grift with this guy? Of course it's all going to him.
I like the Truth Social post Trump put out, because I mean, let's say that the captain of this sinking ship is Trump, and he's so damn stupid. He's out there right now saying he can't put the money up for this bond in New York. And then he goes on Truth Social and says, I got $500 million sitting in a pile. And frantically, his lawyers are going over, no, he really doesn't. But there now seems to be a question. He might actually have the money and he just doesn't want to spend it on the bond, which the courts aren't going. I'm sure that this is going to come back and bite him somewhat.
Listen, Matt, the fuller his diaper gets, the happier a weekend I'm going to have. Because we have been through a lot as this country with him. You need to enjoy every single layer of his humiliation. And that's what this tour is all about. I so appreciated Representative Ilhan Omar, mm-hmm. You know, despite differences we have on our side, when she was asked, are you supporting President Biden? She said, without hesitation, of course, we're facing the end of our democracy and the rise of fascism.
Yep.
And that's what everybody's answer should be. And I know you're Senator Klobuchar going to bring Ilhan Omar to Sexy Liberal. Who can say, Matt? Who can say?
Mm-hmm. I had Dean Phillips. Dean Phillips is my House rep. And they moved my border. I had Ilhan Omar. Now I have Dean Phillips. And I kept looking. I was like, what are you doing? You do understand that democracy is at stake here. this is not the time to try to be the young gumption kid. I just don't understand what he was ever thinking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, he's not invited to Sexy Liberal. Everyone else is.
The overall, you know, I think one of the things, and we said this when, you know, when Trump got the third Supreme Court justice, I said, okay, no one sits out election ever again. The Republicans, ever since they overturned Roe v. Wade, have said, no, we've changed on abortion. That's garbage. They're putting in this whole thing with this lifehood where a frozen embryo is a living human being. They want to get rid of in vitro fertilization. They want to get rid of contraception. The reality is it's not just democracy. It's the rights of women to be able to actually make the choices for themselves in their own lives that is on the ballot. And it's going to be on the ballot every single election from here on out.
I mean, didn't we learn that, Matt, in 2016? But for 75,000 votes, women have lost their bodily autonomy? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this is literally not hyperbole. That's why I agreed, you know, to this many cities, besides the naked pictures that someone clearly has of me. But because, you know, this is it. This, you know, is not hyperbole to say this could be our last election. He's telling you he wants to be a dictator. Yeah. I mean, the fact that we're even talking about there's a possibility of giving the nuclear codes to someone who stole our nuclear secrets and is likely sold them or going to sell them. I mean, that is a traitor that was installed by Russia in the first place. I mean, are you kidding me? So, I mean, it is, you're absolutely right, Matt, all hands on deck. And well, that's why we're coming to so many cities. And, you know, we always pick a sexy liberal cause in every city. This time we haven't, we're about to choose, but it's going to be a get out, just one cause, which is get out the vote, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
You're going to like coming to Minneapolis-St. Paul because ever since the DFL took over the whole government last year, we've become a sanctuary city for a lot of things. And we're actually seeing a lot of people move here now, which is it's great, but it's also just a really sad gauge of the temperature of the rest of the country where people are trying to just live their lives and they're having to flee to Minnesota as refugees because of the hate that is out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm busy picking out my, you know, genital jewelry I'm going to get installed at the Harmar Mall.
There you go.
In honor of democracy.
I got a punch card. Well, quite literally. But I mean, I'll get you set up over there, okay?
Thanks.
The Sexy Liberal shows, once again, you're actually, and I should mention too, the other show that I was looking at that I might actually go road trip for, DC next January. I saw that. That's your last show, correct, on the tour?
Yep, for the inauguration. Yep.
I think that's one of the things I love about this tour too, is you're going to hit all the major cities. I do want to once again mention that she is going to be here in Minneapolis, the Pantages Theater, kicking off the Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour on April 13th. Chicago, you want to keep an eye on it. It's Saturday, August 17th, the Vic Theater, the DNC special in Chicago. You can get tickets. I'll put the links out for everything. Steph, as always, it is an absolute privilege and pleasure to talk with you. I'm so glad you're coming back to Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Matt, we love our Minneapolis station and we love you. Thanks so much for doing this for
my
us.
Pleasure. All my best to the pups there, and you take care, Mama.
Bye, Bonnie. Bye, Clyde.
Bye-bye. Stephanie Miller, kind enough to join us to kick off the show here on a Friday. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday.
I'm out here 1,000 miles from my home.
It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday, 952-946-6205. And yeah, once again, thanks to Steph for coming on the show here. I know a lot of fans in Chicago, a lot of fans here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it is so cool that they're going across the country again and doing the full tour as opposed to just one or two shows. I think it's fantastic. I might actually road trip out to D.C. to go catch that last show on inauguration weekend, because I have a feeling it will be Joe Biden. So I've got a lot of political stuff to get to, but I mean, obviously, I think I want to make sure I touch on the main story from today that kind of broke, a sad story. The Princess of Wales says she's in the early stages of treatment for cancer after cancer was found in some tests. In a statement video, Catherine says it was a huge shock after an incredibly tough couple of months. But she sent a positive message saying, I am well and getting stronger every day.
Details of the cancer have not been disclosed, but Kensington Palace says it is confident the princess will make a full recovery. The princess's statement explains that when she had abdominal surgery in January, it was not known that there was any cancer. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. Medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventive chemotherapy. I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. She said she was thinking of all those who have been affected by cancer. For everyone facing this disease in whatever form, please do not lose faith or hope. You are not alone. Catherine will said recovery from surgery in January for a condition which has not been revealed and taken time, and the priority was now reassuring her family. William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our family. The princess added, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte, and Louis in a way that is appropriate for them and to reassure them that I am going to be okay, obviously. She said the family now needs some time, space, and privacy. I'll come back to that in a second. Catherine and Prince William are now not expected to appear with the royal family on Easter Sunday, and there won't be any early return to official duties for the princess. The palace also said Prince William's sudden absence from a memorial service late last February was because of the discovery of Catherine's cancer diagnosis. The couple have faced intense public speculation and social media frenzy about her health since her operation in January. She has not attended any official events since Christmas. In a video statement, she spoke about her the support of her family. Having William by my side is a great source of comfort and reassurance, too, as is the love, support, and kindness from those has been shown by so many of you. It does mean so much to us both. Kensington Palace said the video of the princess was filmed on Wednesday by BBC Studios, the production arm of BBC. In a statement, BBC News said, along with other media, BBC News was briefed by Kensington Palace on the announcement this afternoon. They have to do that part, by the way, because the speculation after she did the Photoshop job on the pictures. And once again, I'm somewhat surprised by that, because we should understand this is like the wealthiest of wealthiest family. And I think it's quaint and cute if she herself decided to download her photos to her iMac and do a little bit of iPhoto, you know, editing, and just didn't do a very good job and posted them like it was just going to go onto a Facebook friend group. But that kind of backfired. And because of that, everybody, that's why they had to specifically announce, no, the BBC News filmed this. BBC News backs it up. That way no one can say it's an AI generated thing, or it's a deep fake video. I think that if she can recover from this, she will, for goodness sakes. I am presuming they have the best doctors on the freaking planet. And as a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if specialists from probably the Mayo Clinic have been contacted as well by, I don't know if they have or not, but if I'm going to look for the greatest doctors on the planet, Rochester, Minnesota is probably one of the places I'm making a call to. I feel somewhat, and I know there's a lot of people that will disagree with this, I do feel somewhat sorry for her, because it's at this point I think she realizes what her job is and what her lot in life is. It's one thing when you're having the big wedding and everyone is like, ooh, look, princess in a carriage as they're going through the community. And I'm not saying that she has not always been she seems to have been always a little bit of a nicer person. She doesn't seem like a real jerk by any means. But then all of a sudden you get a cancer diagnosis and, or as I can attest to, you have your back broken by a drunk driver, and you basically, there's a part of you that just wants to crawl into the safety and security of your family. And it sounds like that's exactly what she has done, which is good for William and good for, I'm glad for the kids, because obviously that's a lot of discussion here. We had, Katie Tessman, the musician up here in Minneapolis, she wrote a book. She went through cancer, and she wrote a book to her kids and four kids about going through that. And so it's one of those things where you kind of want to take the time to go through that. And I can understand this. Unfortunately, she is also in a position where the ability to do that is null and void, because obviously, I mean, these are the same tabloids that paid people to hack their phones, that right now are probably offering $1 million to anyone in these hospitals or in these medical facilities that's willing to get them one picture of Kate getting cancer treatment or whatever kind of, or a page from her medical file or something of that nature. They already are. And so, you know, I have this great little gig and I love being on the air in Chicago. I love being on the air in Minneapolis. I'm very glad I am not, I don't consider myself a celebrity and I'm not, because you get into this world of celebrity, whether that's royals or, you know, the top politicians or movie stars or TV stars or, you know, musicians. And it's almost impossible to get private time. But that being said, when you get to the royal family, I mean, at least they do have, they've got a few houses around. They're pretty big estates. It's pretty easy for them. I mean, I imagine Netflix is, they've got all the streaming services. So I imagine they have got Netflix and all that stuff. So she can just kind of, you know, stay there and hunker down. But it's, I can only imagine the drones. Can you imagine? Seriously, the drones. It must sound like bees by any of their palaces or homes or anything like that. This, of course, on the heels of King Charles and having cancer. And there are some people that have started, they're kind of off the record. It's reporting, but it's off the record reporting. So take it with that grain of salt, that his cancer is pretty serious. And that it's not one of those things where this is going away or going away quickly. And remember, Charles is pretty old. I mean, he waited a long time. And I said, when his cancer diagnosis, if there's anything more Prince Charles, King Charles now, than waiting as long as he did to become king and then fairly quickly after becoming king, getting diagnosed with cancer, how long he's going to be on the throne remains to be seen. But, you know, obviously this is something that is, the family is going through a lot of. So all my best to them. And I wish I could tell the tabloids to lay off, but they won't. We'll take a break, come back, get into other politics. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So let me get into the litany of crazy Republican stuff that I touched on with Stephanie here before. I wanted to talk about Princess Catherine as well. Mike Gallagher, we mentioned this. Representative Mike Gallagher, the chair of the China Select Committee, said Friday he's resigning from Congress on April 19th. So that's basically less than a month away. House Republicans will have a one-vote majority when Gallagher leaves, which is set to dwindle even further later in April. Special election to replace former Representative Brian Higgins is set for April 30th, is likely to send another Democrat to Congress. Gallagher's already planning to retire at the end of the congressional session in late next January. After conversations with his family, I've made the decision to resign my position as a member of the House of Representatives for Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, effective April 19th, Gallagher said in a statement. Gallagher said he would work closely with House Republican leadership in this timeline and that his office will continue to operate and provide constituent services for the remainder of the term. Gallagher, 40, has been seen a rising star in the GOP, was pushed unsuccessfully to run against Tammy Baldwin this cycle. Politico was the first to report that Gallagher's retirement. Republicans are set to be down to just 218 members to Democrats, 213 when Ken Buck's resignation takes effect on Friday. Gallagher will take that down to 217. Republicans will not be able to afford just one defection on any party line vote when Gallagher leaves. Any more would cause a bill to fail. Higgins' replacement will likely bring Democrats up to 214. But three special elections in May and June to replace Buck and other Republicans almost certainly give Republicans some breathing room. Republicans were already panicking when Buck announced his resignation. Gallagher's departure is likely to set off a five-alarm fire. They basically, my guess is going to be, and I am not joking about this, my guess is going to be is that Johnson will gavel the House closed as opposed to risk what could happen. You have, say, a bad late season snowstorm. It's April 19th. Say you have a bad late season snowstorm that's affecting some of the mountain states, and you've got Republicans who are not there in House and or maybe going through a medical procedure. Suddenly you slip below the threshold and there's more Democrats than Republicans. Can you imagine the chaos if the Democrats try to push for a replacement of the House Speaker at that point? Holy God, it would be magnificent. It would literally be the cherry on top of that absolute crap Sunday that they have got the House Republicans. To see them basically, and what you're seeing here, and by the way, let's talk about the retirements. This is, I remember when the old moderate Republicans, and this was a lot, was Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich basically in the age after W. Bush got, or H.W. Bush got beat in 92, you know, Gingrich basically came on out and said, we're going to be the nastiest little biatches that ever lived, and you're going to have to become this far-right Republican because this is what we're going to go with. And it worked for them. It worked for them. It set a standard that if you were a moderate Republican, and I have said this, and for the people in Chicago, you may not know the full story here. I voted Republican up until about 2003, and it became clear that George W. Bush had sent the U.S. Army into a country under false pretenses, and that was the last time. And not a single Republican was saying, maybe we should hold him accountable. And then they basically swift voted John Kerry. That really was the end for me, to basically go on out there and find veterans to attack other veterans who, once again, every claim the swift boat veterans made against John Kerry was an outright political lie. They lied and demeaned a decorated war hero. Burn in hell, you jackasses. As a veteran of the U.S. Army, I will say that to you to your face. You disgust me how you turned on a fellow veteran just because of politics. And I hope that there's not a VFW or American Legion that ever let you into their ranks again, frankly. That being said, that was the end for me. But I live in the suburbs of the Twin Cities. When I first moved back here in 2000 from Iowa, my House rep was a Republican. And as a matter of fact, was a friend of ours. He, you know, was someone that my wife had known for years. And yeah, we actually had a sign in our house, a Democrats for a guy named Jim Rhodes. And he was a Republican. We voted for him. He was a moderate there. And he got ran out of the party real fast around 2000. I remember when all the traditional moderates, the guys that were fiscally conservative, but kind of more socially liberal, they didn't make it past 2004. So when you look at guys like Gallagher and you're looking at Buck, these aren't moderate Republicans who are fleeing the party. These are conservative far right Republicans who are saying the rest of this party is an absolute train wreck, and they have no, it is literally a bunch of kids playing soccer, where it's the ball goes over there and there's no game plan. There's no nothing. They just all run to the ball and the ball goes over there and they all run to the ball. It is there's no agenda, game plan, consensus. There's nothing like that. And that's why you're seeing these guys leave. I think Gallagher realizes, I don't want to be part of this mess anymore. And the problem is, and I've said this and I'll say it again, the problem is you guys on the right, you went out there and you welcomed in a bunch of people who are only concerned about their Twitter followers. They're only concerned about the trolls. They're only concerned about the self-validation they get by basically being the person to go out there and say and be the guy that pours gasoline on the clown car in the dumpster fire. That is, they have no intention of actually leading or making lives better or passing legislation. They are only in it for themselves. We got a bunch up here in Minnesota, just in that Minnesota State House and the State Senate, Republicans that are just basically only there for their Twitter followers. And yeah, they're just as big of a mess up here as they are in Washington, D.C. So that's why I think Ken Buck is... There was, what was her name? There was a cook, Anthony Bourdain, the great chef, and a lot of people love Anthony Bourdain. I loved Anthony Bourdain. He was, Sandra Lee was the cook on the Food Network, who was someone who basically did like, she would cook with box cake mixes and stuff like this. And it was more about making drinks. And it was this really kind of, really crappy cooking show. And Anthony Bourdain was at an event one time and she came up to him and she said, "We're colleagues." And that was the time that Anthony Bourdain knew he had to leave the Food Network. He had to go and leave it because he said, no, you and I are not colleagues. You are not even, you couldn't hold my water, period. And that's when he needed to leave. That's the exact same thing that's happening right now. You know, Ken Buck has got Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene coming up to him and saying, "We're colleagues." And he's like, "Get me the hell out of here." That's exactly what it is right there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Speaking of Broomhilda herself, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she filed a resolution calling for the ouster of House Speaker Mike Johnson on Friday. Greene stopped short of forcing a vote. "It's more of a warning than a pink slip," said Royd Rage. Green and other far-right Republicans say they're furious with Johnson for avoiding a government shutdown. Like I said, they are only there for their Twitter trolls. By moving a government funding bill Friday with Democratic votes, Green called on the legislation to atrocious attack on the American people. If Green had offered her resolution as privilege, the House would have been required to vote within 2 legislative days. Green says she still might go there, but not yet. "I'm not saying that it won't happen in 2 weeks and it won't happen in a month. Who knows when? But I'm saying the clock has started," Green said. "It's time for a conference to choose a new speaker." Yes. Literally, when you went and got Johnson, you got literally the most unknown guy in the House. And I think half the Republicans are like, "Okay, fine, we'll go with them." Gates filed privileged version of the similar resolution in October, leading to the fateful vote of ousting Kevin McCarthy from the Speaker's office. In its wake, Republicans spent weeks with no leader, rejecting candidates after candidate in a series of internal party votes before plucking Johnson out of obscurity because he hadn't made any enemies. Since winning the Speaker's gavel, Johnson has passed up several chances to shut the government down, earning ire among the far right wing House Freedom Caucus members, several of whom staged a press conference Friday morning to denounce the government funding bill. Andrew Clyde, Georgia, called it a total surrender by Republican leadership. These are idiots that just don't know what the hell they're doing. They really do think that there's somehow you can shut the government down and this is going to lead to a positive outcome. And frankly, what it is too is it's the flawed mentality that if I hurt everybody, then you're going to have to, it's the hostage situation. They want to basically take the American people hostage and say, "Well, if you want me to not start killing people, you'd better give in to my demands." They tried this before. And it ended up costing us a few billion dollars. It was like $40 billion, $50 billion. A lot of, and of course, everyone was upset. And that back then, I remember it was Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is like, "I think we sent a message." Ted Cruz. Yeah, you sent a message. You're a bunch of idiots. If Green was to follow through on a threat to oust Johnson, it's not clear whether the same dynamic would prevail in October when 8 Republicans voted with all Democrats to oust McCarthy. It's possible Democrats could bail Johnson out. I would say this. It's a very quick way. What I hope Marjorie Taylor Greene does this, because here's what you do is you look at Johnson and say, "We would like a vote on the Ukrainian, aid bill, sending money to Ukraine. You give us a vote on that. We'll vote to keep you in the speaker's chair. If not, well, we're going to go with March. We're going to go with Roid Rage over there. Finally, let me talk. Okay. Donald Trump is really the dumbest guy I have ever seen. I mean, he really is. I clearly think the man might have a learning disability. He is currently, on Monday, there is a clock ticking behind him. He has got to put forward $464 million to hold a bond so he can appeal the ruling that basically he's a fraud. He has said they approached over, 30 businesses. No one wanted to front them the money. And some of them just basically they couldn't because they won't accept property as collateral in this situation. But he basically, he said no one's willing him to give him money and he doesn't have that kind of cash. This is why he wants to proceed without having to put the bond out. Okay, fine. He then last night, it's actually early this morning, he went up on Truth Social. He claimed to be sitting on $500 million in cash. And he doesn't seem to understand how much he just torpedoed his own argument that he can't put forward the bond. In an early all cap post, here's what he said. Through hard work, all cap letters here because he's an elderly man. Through hard work, talent, and luck, I currently have almost $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which I intended to use for my campaign for president. I can tell you right now, the courts don't care about your campaign for president. If you've got money, they want the money for your bond. If you don't have money, well, then you're going to have to start selling properties. That led former Watergate prosecutor Nick Ackerman to question what exactly the former president is trying to do as the deadline is coming up for the $464 million financial fraud bond looms, with CNN co-host John Berman asserting, are you an appeals court? Who's going to decide whether you reduce your money or not? Wouldn't you look at the post on Truth Social saying, wait a second, you just told me you have the money. You were saying it's impossible to find. Why should we give you any grace here? You're saying you've got it. That's right, Ackerman said. I mean, that's the dumbest thing he could have possibly done to put that on Truth Social because that's a direct admission by him that he has the money. So my guess is due to that, because he is the stupidest man who has ever been in politics, my guess is he's not going to get any waverance on the bond. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday. I hope you're having a good day out there and hope you're having a good weekend ahead. I wanted to bring up this story from Chicago, and I'm presuming you guys have had it covered down there. But I wanted to talk about this because I find this to be amazing sometimes how science is there. And at the end of this story, the fact that they were able to actually give some level of closure here to a family, I think, is a very good thing. This is, and like I said, I'm presuming in Chicago this has already been covered. The partially dismembered remains, human remains found in 1979. In Chicago suburb have been identified through DNA and forensic genealogy as those of a man who was 27 when he vanished. I mean, that is amazing to me. That this is what 45 years ago, and they were able to finally figure this out. Barrington Hills police announced Wednesday the remains are those of Joseph Kaliva. He vanished August 1979, the same month of a boy who was on horseback riding found the remains in the village about 40 miles northwest of Chicago. Authorities were unable to identify the man who had been decapitated, had been burned, and was missing appendages. Last year, Barrington Hills police sent items containing genetic material to Othram, a Texas-based genetic genealogy company that specializes in forensic DNA work. After company scientists successfully extracted enough DNA to build a genetic profile, genetic genealogists built a family tree using a genetic database with public profiles to trace the man's relatives. Linda Gressick, who was identified as a relative, submitted her DNA, and the results determined that she was Kaliva's half-sister. Kresik said her family grew up in Chicago and her half-brother, a former Marine, was 27 and employed at Chicago Streets and Sanitation when he vanished in August of 1979. She said that knowing the remains are his has provided some closure. Obviously, she wants to know what happened to him. Very unsettling. It's very unsettling. I thought it was okay with him being gone, and I know everyone's goal is closure. It seems like less closure now than there was before, but I'm finding out. I'm hoping to find out more about what happened and everything. This is the 1970s, though. I mean, there was, and this is kind of, I don't know if this was a, the police departments and detective departments hadn't ramped up, although, you know, through the 60s and 70s, we had the rise of the serial killer. It sounds like, you know, this was the kind of case that was going on there. And the Barrington Hills police investigation revealed there were 5 torsos found in Cook County over the span of 16 months, including the remains of Kaliva. That's from the WGN. That's not from the same guy. I mean, I'm no medical expert here. Barrington Hills detectives are asking anyone who knew him remembers anything from the time period that he vanished. So, okay, I guess the one side of this is that they now know what happened to him. Because obviously that's got to be. I can't even imagine 45 years later you finally find out what happened to your brother or sister or your mother or something like that. I mean, at least then you have some idea of what happened. But yeah, I'm kind of getting the impression from this story that they don't have, they still haven't caught the criminal. Are you guys still finding torsos around Chicago? I would hope you're not still finding torsos around. I think the crimes are related at this point, but yeah, I wanted to bring it up because I'm somewhat commending of the fact that they've stayed with it. They found some level of closure here for the family. And yeah, I think you can feel a little bit better about that. So one final political thing before I go for the weekend, and this has to do with the point I've been making for about 3 weeks now, is this insane inconsistency with the media in this country and how they are covering things. Before we got to the Democratic primaries, what was the narrative that you saw in the national media towards the Democrats? Major chasm within the Democratic Party. A major fissure. Earthquakes. They're not united. And then all of a sudden we got to the primaries. And the primaries were, for the most part, you know, showed that the Democrats were far more united than the Republicans. Far more. And that all this talk about how this and granted, there has been a protest vote in regards to the U.S.'s funding of Israel. I've understood that. I have, once again, I think Israel's gone too far at this point. I think they need to stop and pull back. It seems, yeah. I'm of that mind. Don't get me wrong. I think Israel has the right to protect itself. But at this point, it's so punching down at this point and killing so many people. It's yeah. That being said, I understand there was this protest vote, but it was less than what you've seen on the Republican side. The Republican Party is an absolute mess. I mentioned Gallagher and Ken Buck and these guys leaving, fleeing the party. They don't want anything to do with these guys anymore. You've got part of this party that wants to drive the train right off the cliff. And the rest of the party is like, no. You've got, they had this event, this 290-member conference for a retreat that they do. The yearly messaging retreat that they do, they had less than half of their own group there. You still have Trump losing 15 to 20% of the vote in all these primaries, even though he doesn't have any competition anymore. And yet, when was the last time you saw a Republican. Look at the Republican chasm. Look at the Republican fissure. Boy, oh boy, are Republicans not united. When was the last time you saw that? I haven't seen that. It does not exist. And the reality is that when it's the Democrats, they can't run around fast enough to every Democrat and say, what do you think about this fissure? What do you think about this divide? What do you think about this? The Republicans, where is the news media doing that kind of coverage to them when they have an undeniable fissure and break within their party? Chicago, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2 up next. Hour 2 of the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Patrick here. We will definitely be doing some dancing a little bit later on today. As I'm glad you survived the snow, Patrick. I'm glad you survived.
I mean, it was awful. It was so bad. It was dry pavement.
It's one of those things with March. You know, a few inches doesn't last long in the March sun. That's for sure. Which is good. Although it does sound like Monday is going to be a freaking nightmare. Yeah. Monday sounds like it's going to be bad.
It sure does.
What was it? The last time I checked, they're saying, now I will say this. It just as Sven Sundgaard started saying, it was pointing this out. It does look like we are definitely going to be seeing the kind of the trajectory of the heaviest snow moving towards the central part of the state and the west central part of the state. And so that's where you're going to see, they're going to see up to 2 feet of snow out there. Sounds like we're definitely going to be over 10 inches, maybe a foot of snow. The one thing that could be a saving grace for us is it does look like Monday now, as opposed to what was like 6 to 8 inches of snow. We are going to be warm enough where it's more than likely going to be rain in the metro area. So we'll have to see. For people of Christian faith, it's Palm Sunday. So I know a lot of people will be going to church there. Hopefully that's not too bad for you. Sounds like now the snow is going to start on Saturday night. So anticipate it being a little bit of a slow commute on Sunday morning. My suggestion would be to hunker down and enjoy just hunkering down on your Sunday, because it sounds like, especially through the day and into Sunday night, it's going to be a mess out there. And to a point where, and I presume people make smart decisions, but I'm going to make the strong bit of advice. If you have to travel someplace and your plan was to travel Sunday night, especially anywhere up into western Minnesota or into northern Minnesota, I would highly suggest you probably want to change your dates. Either come back earlier or come back later. So my suggestion on that, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I should mention once again, Stephanie Miller, we're going to have that interview I had with her in the 3 o'clock hour up on the podcasting spots for you to enjoy. Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour is coming to the Pantages Theater on April 13th. And once again, she's working on special guests. We didn't say who, but we're working on special guests at the Pantages Theater. April 13th, here's the deal. We've got a pair of tickets to give away for that. We got a pair of tickets to give away. Listen for your chance this hour, for your chance to call in, and you could win yourself some tickets to the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour. So good luck with that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. There's something from yesterday that I wanted to kind of point out that it really is, we have to have a discussion about the Republicans in this state and abortion, because there is this tendency, this belief that the Republicans are trying to put out there that, oh no, this isn't that bad. We're not really going to stop abortion. We're not really going to do all this stuff. This is this is indeed what their policy and plan is. And when I posted the story from yesterday, this was the majority of House Republicans endorsed the abortion ban that threatens IVF, in vitro fertilization. It doesn't just threaten in vitro fertilization. It threatens all abortion, period. That the entire argument is it's the Life at Conception Act would grant full legal rights to embryos from the moment of fertilization, which would mean to me that the goal of this bill is to say they're alive when they're fertilized, henceforth, no abortions ever at any point. Life of the mother, rape or incest, nope, not then. And I mentioned that this is a bill that has 120 House Republicans co-sponsoring it. So I went over there just to take a little peeky-poo at this. Now, this bill actually existed back in 2021, 2022. All right. And guess what? The sponsors on this bill included Jim Hagedorn was the initial sponsor on the bill. And Opie, who is down in one, he is not chimed in yet. But all three of the other Republican House members, Pete Stauber, Michelle Fischbach, and the large tub of Elmer's paste himself, Tom Emmer, all three of them are co-sponsors of this bill. Minnesotans, co-sponsors of this bill. You need to keep this in mind. As Republicans try to scream at you about how it's the border, it's immigration, it's black people in Minneapolis, because that's what that's their entire narrative, isn't it? It's non-white people. Ah, that's the Republicans. That's their tone. What they don't want you to pay attention to is they're trying to basically take away any right you have to choose over your body, anything. That if you, God forbid, you're in the third trimester of your pregnancy. I've been through three children, my wife. I can't imagine how it must feel as you're going through the pregnancy and all of a sudden you're in the third trimester and the doctor comes in and says to you, I've got some very bad news. We have discovered that the fetus is not going to survive outside of the womb. And if you carry this fetus to term, you are more than likely going to die. What you don't want to hear is the next phrase. Oh, and by the way, you have no right in the matter unless you head to Canada. And that's going to be a whole bunch of complexities there. But just FYI, because of the law, you need to die because no one else is going to allow this to happen. That's the Republican Party today. When they sponsored this bill, they sponsored this bill to basically ban all abortions, let alone in vitro fertilization. And I talked about this part yesterday, which is if you are a Republican, I mean, there are a lot of people who basically, they want to have kids and for whatever reason, it's not working. And so they have to go through in vitro fertilization. If they say, no, you can't do that anymore. I think you need to put in perspective how crazy the Republican Party is right now in regards to all this stuff, because this is clearly an agenda they do not want to give up. They've tried. They realize that they've, after 50 some years of tying themselves to absolutely, no exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother, that once Roe v. Wade got overturned, that they were basically, it was going to be impossible for them to kind of get away from that. They finally seem to learn that, but they're not shying away from this agenda. They come on out and they look at you with a face that says, hey, you know what? We're evolving on abortion. And yet then in this budget bill, they put this freaking life bill in that basically says there's no option. How about this one? This was today. This is a coverage from The Reformer. conservative groups testifying this week before the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee likened surrogacy, which allows infertile couples to enlist the aid of a woman to carry and deliver a child for them, surrogacy. They complain that that was modern day slavery. The groups gave their testimony in opposition to the Senate file and House file, which establishes a legal framework governing Minnesota's surrogacy contracts. Current statutes neither explicitly allows nor prohibits the practice, leaving potential parents and their surrogates to navigate legal issues on their own. The bipartisan 2016 legislative task force recommended the creation of legal framework to spell out requirements for surrogates and intended parents, clarify and establish parental rights, set compensation guidelines, and provide for enforcement of contract provisions. The Senate bill, authored by Aaron McQuay, hero, is a step in that direction. It's supported by groups that advocate for people dealing with infertility, as well as for the nonpartisan Uniform Law Commission, which drafts model legislation in the areas of state law, which uniformity among the states is advisable. Conservatives and religious groups, however, have come out against the bill, against surrogates. On December 6, 1865, the USA ratified the 13th Amendment, which banned slavery in the United States, said Rebecca Delahunt, Director of Public Policy for the Minnesota Family Council, in testimony on Friday. Yet the Minnesota legislature is considering a policy in 2024 to regulate the trade of children, opening up the door to the legal buying and selling of children through surrogacy. How is it possible to wholeheartedly support the 13th Amendment in the United States, but then try to legalize the selling of children to unrelated adults in 2024? Okay. Surrogate mothers in Minnesota can already be compensated for their services, as current law does not prohibit it. Patience Griswold, an engagement coordinator with a conservative group, Them Before Us, struck a similar note by arguing that surrogacy turns children into commodities to be awarded to the adults with the money and means to acquire them, and that creates a class of people who can be sold. Minnesota Catholic Conference used similar language in written testimony opposing the bill. In the United States, roughly 1 in 5 married couples experiences infertility, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Several thousand babies are born each year through surrogacy, which can cost between parents north of $100,000 in legal fees, in vitro fertilization, and medical expenses and compensations to the surrogate. Experts who study the practice have generally found that most surrogacy arrangements are successfully implemented, and most surrogate mothers are well motivated to have a little difficulty separating from the children born as a result of arrangement, according to a comprehensive 2015 review of the existing literature. Accordingly, that study turned up no evidence of harm to children born as a result of surrogates. One of the most comprehensive studies on surrogates tracked several dozen families from surrogate pregnancy to the resulting children's young adulthood. It found no differences between assisted reproduction and unassisted contraception families of mothers or young adults' psychologically well-being or the quality of family relationships. A survey found that over 70% of Americans supported surrogacy, and the majority agreed that surrogate mothers should be able to seek compensation for it. So I want to go back to the description that they put forward on this. Minnesota legislature is considering a policy to regulate the trade of children, opening the door for the legal buying and selling of children through surrogacy. How is it possible to wholeheartedly support the 13th Amendment? It creates a class of people who can be sold. Okay. Do you understand what they're doing here? When it comes to surrogacy, surrogates, when you talk about in vitro fertilization, what you have is, in many cases, a woman who, for whatever reason, is unable to get pregnant, but has healthy eggs and wants to have a child. And so they pay someone not to knock boots with hubby, per se, but to get in vitro fertilization and carry a child to term, that generally is the genetics of the two people that want the kid that can't have the kid. It's not like the mom is chained, the birth mom is chained to a bed. It's a process that people freely involve themselves in. Not something I would encourage people necessarily to do. It's obviously a, you know, giving birth is a interesting process, but at the same time, it's not like you're going to a grocery store and shopping for kids off a shelf here. I'll take that woman's child. No, that's not what we're talking about here. You're kind of putting it out there like that's what's going on. Which, bringing this back to what I first was talking about the in vitro fertilization. There sure as hell seems to be this new modern mentality of the right that if, God forbid, you can't have, if you're a woman and you can't have a baby by having good old Christian approved sex with a man, that you don't have any other options, that is just God spiting you as a barren woman, you don't have children, you know, good day, sir. Because that sure as hell seems like when they're arguing against surrogates, they're arguing against in vitro fertilization. So basically what the Republicans' whole mentality seems to be now is that if you can't have children the old-fashioned traditional way, that's God speaking. That's Jesus saying, nope, spite. Or actually smite. Smite you. Smite. You can't have kids. Kind of like, I guess, you know, remember in It's a Wonderful Life when George Bailey goes back to the town and he's wondering where his wife is and she's the old maid? Is that really what we're going back to the days? It's like, oh, that's the woman over there that can't have children. She's the old maid of town. Jesus! I would hope that's not what we're doing. It sure as heck seems like it. And it's also a very interesting stance. I mean, I want to make sure we understand how extreme to the far right this is, this new mainstream Republican mentality. That for years, I grew up, I remember Republicans praising, I know Republicans that have had in vitro fertilization, for goodness sakes. I've known them that have had it, and successfully. Like I said, the people I've known that have done in vitro fertilization all have had kids. So great, I'm glad that happened. Doesn't mean there weren't tears. Doesn't mean it wasn't a struggle. It just means it happens. Life, babies, the whole thing, you know? Here in this case, you're basically, for whatever health reasons, you can't have a child with the wife in the relationship. So they basically hire someone to carry the child for them. That's their child. Ta-da! Done, right? That's a good thing. That's more. Not anymore. I'm really starting to have some real questions here about where they're going with all this. Because for a group of people that talk about, you know, this future where it's the handmaid's tale, it's basically you know, women are locked in a room and these sort of things, you sure as heck seem to be going that way. And by the way, if I can throw this back into that whole discussion, there are Republicans who have basically introduced bills. They haven't gone anywhere, thank God, as of now, but have introduced bills that would forbid women from leaving their state if they are diagnosed as pregnant. That they could not leave. If they were pregnant, they could not leave their state because, heaven forbid, they were actually have to you know, have abortion or make choices over their own lives. This is some weird-ass, far-right extremism crap, which is, once again, why every time I will talk, I am going to be telling you over and over and over again, abortions on the ballot. Okay, if I may, because I'm running late here, but if I may, let me just run through all the things I just talked about. Republicans snuck an anti-abortion, anti-in vitro fertilization bill into the current budget bill. I'm presuming that's going to get pulled out. That's not going to happen. I guarantee you Joe Biden's not going to sign that. But that in that bill, it went with the Alabama standard that a frozen bomb pop embryo is basically an active, alive human being. So that basically wipes out abortion across the country. You have a war against in vitro fertilization right now by the Republicans. Now you have them saying you can't have a surrogate mother if for some unfortunate reason you as a woman cannot carry a child in pregnancy. You basically, you can't do this process anymore. This is some weird far-right extremism stuff right now, man. And so for all you people out there who's like, I'm not sure about Joe Biden. Are you sure about Joe Biden now? Because I'm sure about Joe Biden. I'm sure about this because I don't want this clown car of a Republican Party anywhere near me, my wife, my daughters, my son. Nope. Because it's clear they're going to put a religious, a Christian-based litmus test on your medical decisions, that they get to decide what is and what is not right. That's some scary ass stuff, man. That is some scary ass stuff. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break, come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Friday.
If I were a human being, I'd head straight for New Orleans.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show.
I really am. I have to tell you the truth. I am stunned that this, I mean, well, my gut feeling is these polls that have shown Trump with the lead. Trump, reminder, if Trump is getting 40% of the black vote, that would mean that after getting 6% of the black female vote in 2020, that for him to have gotten that, he would have had to quintuple his vote total with black women just to get to a point where 30% of black women support him, which means that 50% of black men support Donald Trump. That's not true. If you spent any time with Generation Zers, and I've got three of them, and I talk to them often about what their friends are saying and how they're doing it to kind of get an idea of what's going on within their generation, very few of them like Donald Trump. And it's pretty obnoxious. Whether that's high school kids or college kids, they do not like Donald Trump. So when he comes back and says he's leading with Generation Z, no, he's leading with Generation Zs that live out in Idaho with a landline in their house. I mean, sure. But when you look at what they're trying to do, I do. There is a part of me that kind of sits at, looks at this country and is stunned. It literally is what I have said, that I think Joe Biden, as far as meal form goes, is a delicious hamburger with good sides and a nice malt. I'll take him. But even at worst, Joe Biden is an Arby's beef and cheddar. At best, Donald Trump is an actual crap sandwich, human feces between two pieces of bread. And yet, the right, because of their control of the media, as I mentioned at the end of last hour, their lackluster ability to hold both sides accountable or even try to look like they're not being biased towards the Republicans, the money advantage, all these things, they are experts at convincing people to go take a bite of the crap sandwich. This is the reason why in 2016, I sat up all night long that election night staring at the ceiling saying, what in the hell did these people do? And there is no excuse after all the stuff that we have gone through since then, including the attempted overthrow of the government, that this has any reason to be close
outside of, we are seeing how extensively brainwashed the population of this country is. The amount of people who are not only eager to have a crap sandwich are looking for a third serving of it with a smile on their face. We have fascism on the door here in the United States. That's not a something that people want to understand. That's a line for a museum, because we as we live through these times, we don't generally have a tendency to focus on what is actually going on out there. But for God's sakes, it's fascism. Fascism is marching, and it's not the first time it's been tried in this country. But it's the first time it's been tried when you have such a large portion of the population brainwashed into thinking it's a viable political option. I get it. We get tired. We get lazy. Take a look at pandemic. I mean, how many people are like, do I have to wear a mask again? I'll just save your life. You know, heaven forbid you get sick. But we have a tendency of not wanting to just do what's right. It's kind of the failure of this country is that we've had such a successful democracy for so long that people take it for granted. Having been in Germany when the East Berlin Wall came down and people were streaming out of East Germany and they were looking at you and saying, the first thing I want to do is vote for the people who represent me. That kind of levels it for you. It makes you understand what was really going on here. And in this country, our success has led and created an entire class of people who feel as if it's beneath them to choose their political leaders. I don't think there's anything I could say. I mean, how many indictments against the guy? He tried to overthrow the government. Every Republican out there is got the decorum and dignity of a howler monkey with diarrhea. And then there's all this, that they're out right there telling you exactly what they're going to do when it comes to women's rights. And that all these laws we passed in Minnesota won't matter because they want to make this on a federal level so they can stop this all. And then what's next? They're sending in troops to occupy Minnesota because those liberals need to be put in their place. If there is nothing that gets you to the point where you are saying, how do I make sure I'm registered to vote? Where am I voting? Let's make sure I get this done. It should be this. It absolutely should be this. Because the reality is this is crazy that this is even close. And like that great meme that I got from the guys in Canada who said, why does it seem like every election in the United States is everyone gets a puppy, barely ekes out lifetime diarrhea? That's exactly what it is, that you have so many people who are so angry and bitter at their own lives that are being magically controlled by the right-wing media machine that basically say, I don't want a puppy. I want diarrhea. Give me another bite of that crap sandwich. It's delicious. Ugh, scary stuff indeed. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Javier, hold on. I'll get you your call here in a second. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You would not believe your eyes if 10 million...
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Javier is in Minneapolis, wanted to chime in today. Welcome on in, sir.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, sir.
I was, it's just funny that these people that were all anti-vax, my body, my choice, are now dipping their toes into everybody else's rights. But that's not what I called you about. I was going to call you about this story you touched on earlier. I have a metaphor for you when it came to the bloodbath story.
Oh, yeah. Earlier this week.
It's if you have a dog, that bit somebody. You take that dog seriously from now on. He may mean, he doesn't do it all the time, and he doesn't do this all the time, but at the same time, if you have a dog that bit somebody, you take that dog seriously from then on out. You don't get a second chance. You don't get a pass on that. And I look at the January 6th as, like, this guy bit somebody.
Yeah. Well, no, he bit somebody, and he has said that he wants to be a dictator, and he has said that he should be able to be president forever. He's already said that a few times. You have people who basically wanted to – you have an element of the Republican Party whose main goal is to destroy the government of the United States. And you wonder – and I get what's going to happen. They're stupid. The Republicans are stupid. They think they're nuanced and clever, and they'll go through what they're doing, and then when the thing collapses and the stock market collapses and unemployment starts going crazy and really we start having that inflation, which is 300-400% a year, and all of a sudden the dollar is worthless and people's retirements are gone and people are starving in the streets, and all of a sudden all these things happen. And all of a sudden they say, well, maybe we should go back. They will be the ones to say, it's so much better than it was. But then all of a sudden, when they're getting chased out of towns by angry mobs, they'll say, you know, maybe we should go back to the way things were. Because they're idiots, and they don't know what they're doing. And this is, and if I can, I think one of the reasons why I'm upset with all these Republicans who are leaving is that that's them just throwing their hands in the air and hoping the Democrats control at least one element of government to stop them from being as stupid as they want to be. It is what it is. It is what it is. Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour comes to the Pantages Theater on April 13th. Steph, John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, Frangela, all coming into town. I have got a pair of tickets right now to go see Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour at the Pantages Theater. Caller number 5, good luck. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Caller 5, you will win those tickets right now. Courtesy of Steph and everyone here at AM 950 as listener appreciation months continue on here. I wanted to bring up another story. The story about the surrogates came from the Reformer. They had another story I wanted to make sure I mentioned as well, because it's sometimes a little head scratching. I think we should have a transparent government. I really do. I think we should have people that we find out what's going on and that things are not kept in secret and blah, blah, blah. I don't believe in that. I also say, as I'm going to get into this, Tony Webster has been somebody we've actually had on the show. So I have basically the Tony Webster. I think he does a great job. Now I'm just getting that out. So I have basically the ability to, I don't want anyone saying I'm not being on the up and up. Open government advocates are alarmed about a Minnesota bill that would stop people from being able to sue for damages when the government wrongly denies them public records. The bill was scheduled to be heard by the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee on Friday, but was pulled late Thursday after pushback from government watchdogs and the Minnesota Justice Coalition. Despite a Friday deadline for bills to clear committee, the provision would wind up slipped into another bill later. Slipped into another bill later on in the legislative session. Government transparency, which, by the way, if you say this is not about government transparency and then you slip this bill into another bill, so hoping no one notices it, guilty as charged. Okay, that's, I'll just say it like that. Government transparency advocates say the bill, written by Hennepin County officials and advertised as a modernization of data storage practices, does much more than update the data retention law. As it often with the cases of controversial provisions, the key provision in the bill eliminating damages for public records violations is buried in a pile of verbal tedium. The bill changes who can sue for damages for violations to the Data Practices Act, which requires the government to make most records available to the public. Under the bill, most people, like journalists and average citizens, would no longer be able to sue for damages. Now, I want to make sure we understand, this is when you get to a point where a lawsuit is involved, there's clearly a case where people are clearly trying to stop people from seeing what's going on. Undeniably. This, and I'll get to this because they have some examples of this. But yeah, this is a case where it's a situation where people will ask for stuff, and then the stall tactics and the delay tactics. What this bill does is basically say, no, you have a responsibility to give up these documents, even if they don't make the government look that good. You have to give up these documents. And if you don't, we can sue you for that. That's what they're trying to change. Open records advocates say the bill contains some provisions that appear to be aimed at independent journalist Tony Webster, who occasionally does contribute to The Reformer, which is where this story is from, and as I mentioned before, has been on this show before. And the station, what they're trying to do is prevent people like Tony Webster or members of the press or any other citizen from claiming damage and exemplary damages for blowing off public data requests. Webster is examining whether trespassing law is being used to help homeless people out of a county library, especially Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. Okay, so you have this. That's the story. Is there a county library, and I'm presuming it's one county library, might be invoking a trespassing law in a county library to keep homeless people out of the library? County officials told Webster they require 9 months and $4,000 to gather the trespassing records. That seemed ridiculous, Webster said. I would agree. That seems to be a little bit excessive to get some basic county records. The county denied his request for copies of trespass notices, so he sued. Meanwhile, county officials said he could have redacted indictment reports if he paid $217 as sort of a down payment, so he overnighted a money order. For months, he got no data. So they told him, hey, if you give us $217, we'll send you the redacted reports, which, okay, at this point, you know that this is a stall tactic, because if you have the reports and you've redacted them, that means you have the reports and you have them right in front of you, and you're saying, I can send those to you. Well, then you can send the other reports as well. So he sends the money, but he plays along. He sends $217 to the county overnight in a money order. For months, he got nothing. Finally, in January, a judge ordered the county. So the county still had not given him the stuff. They ordered the county to give him trespass notices and ruled the county redacted way too much data from incident reports. He was given information in February, but said the data was still missing. He's scheduled to go to trial on April 8th over the alleged missing data and how the county handled the request. He's seeking damages and attorney's fees. Their behavior has been alarming, Webster said. I would agree. Data governance at Hennepin County is a complete mess, and changing laws to weaken accountability is not the solution. I would wholeheartedly agree with this. Now, I have to take a quick side note here and say, why aren't you giving him this information? You do realize, I mean, it's Stein has said this over and over again. I've had numerous other guests say this. It's not the crime, it's the cover-up that usually gets you. And now, how's that cover-up doing? I'm on a radio station. I'm talking about it. The Reformer's covering it now. I'm sure you guys look good. And you're going to trial, and you're going to lose, because the law, as it states, says you need to cough up that information. If you are more concerned about the public seeing what you're doing than getting just fulfilling public records requests, which is part of the job of the government, then you clearly are knowing you're doing something that is seriously wrong is going on. Now, part of this, I have no doubt, is just crappy management. It just, oh, you want me to pull together all those files? Well, they're all over there in that pile. We haven't filed them. That's 3 years. I got to go through all that. It's going to take me a week and a half. I don't have the time. Okay, fine. I guess I will. I get that's part of it. But you should be streamlining your operation. This is clearly, in this case particular, over the top. If this is the case that spurred this law, I've got some questions for the Democrats that sponsored this law. Because, yeah, this has been sponsored by the Democrats. Do you remember This is one of the reasons why I'm so upset about this bill. Okay, do you remember when Kurt Dowd put the mute button into the speaker's pulpit at the House? I remember that. And he tried to parlay that he had no idea where it came from. And then basically when he lost the speakership, he had a person come in there and quickly yank it out of there. And no one seemed to know anything about it. And Melissa Hortman kind of chuckled about it. Like, yeah, we don't quite know what happened there. During those times when the Republicans were in charge of the House or the Senate, there was always these calls from the Democrats saying we should have accountability. There should be public, you know, input and public oversight of what is going on. Agreed. In Wisconsin right now, you've got a House and an Assembly and a Senate in Wisconsin who are masters at preventing anyone from seeing what really is going on within the Republican conference. And they are not letting people know anything about what is going on. I don't think we should have that. This story is, okay, Hennepin County, this is just stupid. Why are you being stupid? It's a, what is your trespassing policy with the county library? Dear God, this is, what are you doing, you fools? Just give them the damn information. Stop acting like this is the hill you want to die on, because this is a really stupid hill to die on. And you're going to lose. Just, yeah, Hennepin County spokesperson Carolyn Marion sent an email. I cannot attest that this is an attempt to thwart journalists' data request, but do not provide further comments saying a Hennepin County official would testify about the bill through the hearing has since been canceled. So they say it's not about trying to stop journalists, but they don't say anything else. Damages can cost the government $1,000 to $15,000 per violation, so the government refuses to turn over a bunch of documents that can add up. So just turn over the damn documents. What are you doing? Stop being stupid. I hate being so kind of juvenile here, but yeah, just why are you being so stupid? Just hand over the documents. If you have a trespass, I mean, do you just not want to look like you're mean to homeless people, or you just don't want to get in trouble with your boss? I'm certain that's why Hennepin County is trying to par this back. The bill would affect Minnesota Coalition of Government Information known as the MNCOGI2. The group is almost 3 years into a lawsuit against Minneapolis over data about police discipline records, and the city claims are not public. The Open Records Group is seeking exemplary damages because it believes the city willfully violated its request. I would agree with that. Webster says the bill seems designed to be as misleading as possible. Hennepin County fact sheet about the bill makes no mention of ending damages for violations. He got a copy of the proposed legislation and opened up its metadata to find it was written by Christy Lottie Johnson, the county's data compliance officer, a defendant in his lawsuit. The bill is sponsored by Senator Bonnie Westlin, the DFLer from Plymouth, and Sandra Feist, a DFLer from New Brighton, although the DFL spokesperson Westlin said the bill was pulled because stakeholders had some concerns with it, and she wants to continue working on it during the interim, and maybe we'll hear about it next year. Do not slip it into another bill. You guys tried to sneak this through. It got caught. It's a dumb thing to get caught on. I mean, this is like getting fired because you stole a box of paper clips from the office supply. I mean, it's just dumb. The one request for the police records, I know that's testy. I know that those guys don't like ever giving anything up. And reminder, even after they use the, like when we go back to the Jaleel Stallings case, when they used the Jaleel Stallings body cam footage in the trial, they did not want to release that to the public. And the defense lawyer was like, I'm going to release this to the public. And they're like, wait a second, you can't do that. And they finally, he admitted that, you know, there's not much they could do to stop him. I don't know what you guys are doing here. I mean, so just give them the trespassing records for the county library and be done with it. Why is this the hill you guys have decided to die on? It's just dumb. And frankly, DFL, what are you doing? You get upset when Republicans are doing things behind closed doors, and now here you are, and it seems like you're trying to do the best to basically prevent people from finding out what's going on. Come on, we're better than this. 952-946-6205. Patrick, who is our winner for those Stephanie Miller tickets?
Congratulations, Joan in Minneapolis. You're going to see Stephanie Miller on April 13th.
Congratulations, Joan in Minneapolis. We hope you enjoy that. Guess what? I got another week of tickets to give away. Listen next week. I got three pairs of tickets to give away next week, so you have to listen every day. That's how I get you. You'll have to listen every day for your chance to win for the Sexy Liberal Tour. Let's take a break. Come on back. We'll wrap up the show for the week when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
I want to dance with my baby.
Yeah, come on. One of the things I'm very glad about is we don't have what the Republicans do every election cycle, every end of legislative cycle, I should say, which is basically they go into a room and then 5 seconds before the end of the session, they throw a bunch of bills out and say, vote now! That's what they do. We don't do that on the Democratic side. But this idea about basically protecting people who, for a lack of any kind of common sense, why are you just not releasing the information? If you have that much of a them versus us mentality, I think you're kind of broken there. That's for sure. It's been fun week here for you. We got Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake coming up. We got Bakken coming in later on tonight with Ghost Box Radio. Have a fantastic weekend. Try to keep your sanity Sunday and Monday, and be careful out there during that big storm. We will be back on a Monday, some way or another. Bob Seger taking us out this week. Have a good one. Till Monday. See ya.
Not enough. No matter who you think you know, you won't get through. It's a given LA law, someone's faster on the draw. No matter where you hide, I'm coming after you.